Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the SFLC podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. It's 2018. If you're not accepting credit cards, you're losing money. Plain and simple. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that is dependable/solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is ours. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years, partnered with 98.5, the Sports Hub, and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out. Again, that is teststrips with a Z.com.
SFLC Podcast.
Oh, good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the SFLC podcast. I am Ryan Sprague. Of course, those of you who are listening got all of our recap from UFC 226. We have Bellator coming up this weekend, but we also have an event that I've been able to cover in the past, and MyMMAnews.com has covered quite a few times, Professional Fighters League. And we are joined out of Columbus, Georgia, by one of the commentators for PFL, Mr. Eves Edwards. Eves, thanks for taking the time with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ryan. I'm excited to talk to you, my man.
Well, and it's funny because we were both kind of trying to line this up, and, you know, the schedules were kind of mixing and matching, and that's just how it works in this situation. So this works out perfectly for me. You know, I get to do the interview with you, I get to do the write-up, then I have to go and I have a hair appointment, and then I'm back here. It's just, it's one of those things. So I was happy to be able to get this done early, but if it sounds like I'm a million miles away, it's because of allergies.
That's cool. I'm waiting until Monday or Sunday to get my hair did.
Now you're just joking with us.
No, I'm actually serious.
Oh, really? Oh,
okay. I'm serious about getting a haircut.
Oh, man. So you have your own personal stylist, I presume?
No, but I have certain places that I go. I only go, when I'm in a certain city, I only go to a certain place.
So did you hold off for D.C.? Did you have a place there lined up?
I got my hair did before I got to D.C.
Oh, there you go. So you know how to get it all freshened up and ready to go, and I'm kind of the same way. If you couldn't tell by the suit coat that I was wearing at PFL Chicago, I also will have my own stylist as well.
You're on top of your game, man.
Well, you know, you've got to be that way. So anyway, obviously we end up going. We see you at PFL. You're doing a great job. You're alongside one of your heroes, Bas Rutten. How did announcing for PFL come to fruition for you?
Well, I worked at Fox initially with the UFC, and one of the VPs there, George Greenberg, was at Fox when I first got there. He had seen me fight in Pride back in the day, and he was happy to see me there, so I was real happy to be there with him on top of that. But then he resigned from Fox. I think he was thinking about retiring, and somebody came up with the PFL that he thought was a really good thing that he wanted to be a part of, I assume. And when he started with them, he gave me a call and told me that he wanted to make me an offer. And that was a really cool thing, because when I first met George, I felt like, man, that's a guy that knows his stuff, and man, if this is what I want to do next, he's a guy I would love to learn from. Kind of like a mentor. Let him be the master splinter to my Michelangelo, you know? Turn me into like a Leonardo or something, not be so wild and crazy. with my Michelangelo Raphael kind of attitude. So he's trying to morph me more into a Donatello Leonardo kind of role. And I'm learning a lot from him, man. So it's pretty good. It's a lot of fun, too.
And you've been traveling all over the place. You know, you were in New York. You were in D.C. You were in Chicago. You've seen three of these go down right now. What do you think stands out from your perspective about the PFL as opposed to the UFCs and the Bellators of the world?
Man, what I like about what's going on in the PFL is the fighters, I believe that the fighters just fight. There's no other concerns. And that's one thing that I've always loved about fighting itself is when you're in there, you're not concerned with anything else but the guy in front of you and getting the win. Now, getting the win in other organizations, sometimes you kind of back off. You kind of, when you get a lead, you get on your bicycle, and or sometimes even when the first fight starts, you don't want to lose because of the fact that losing changes things for you. You don't get the bonus check. That's in every organization still, including the PFL. You don't get the bonus check, but also one loss can mean you're done with the organization. But with the PFL and it being a season thing, you know that you're going to be there through the regular season, and you're trying to make it to the playoffs. So the fact that you're in there and you're just concerned for the win. That's really it. And when a fighter wants to win, they get to be themselves. When their only concern is winning, not winning because of anything. Their only concern is winning because of the positive things that come with it. It's so much easier for a fighter to just focus on the fight itself, be in the moment. And when I say be in the moment, I mean be in the fight. Because if you're concerned with getting that bonus check, or if you're concerned with not getting cut by having a loss, then you're not in the moment. You're thinking about the future. And then that kind of slows you down. You have to be right there in that moment when you're fighting. And that's how the best guys fight. I mean, you see it, including inside the other organizations that are out there. The best guys, ask them what they're thinking about during the fight. They're not thinking about anything else but the moment that they're in.
Wow. I mean, you think that obviously fighters would need to be hyper-focused at that particular point. But I never really thought of it in that context before, which is they just want to be there to fight. They don't want to deal with the hustle and bustle. And I mean, you were in UFC, WEC, Strikeforce, all of those. Did you kind of feel bogged down by all the extra stuff that wasn't fighting in those organizations when you fought?
I wouldn't say bogged down. The thing for me was I just love fighting. When it starts, you can't really be concerned with anything else. You know what I mean? That's one of the reasons why my style was I've had some fights that weren't the most entertaining, but it wasn't because I was not trying to engage. It wasn't because I was on my bicycle trying to run away from someone. That usually happens. That's in on my memory. That's always the other way around if it happens. So that's not a concern for me because I just love fighting and I can't do anything but be in the moment anyway. So I would say personally, no. But I've had friends tell me that they were thinking about this and thinking about that, and that kind of makes me sad. I don't like that. I'm like, man, you can't be where you're at, and you can't be successful unless you're where you're at.
And you know, obviously, you're alongside some famed fighters, Bas Rutten. You know, you have yourself. You have Sean O'Connell, who won his fight in Chicago. Being able to have the four of you together, all watching this, all looking at it from your own fight experience, do you think that you guys bring a more unique approach to broadcasting for mixed martial arts?
I definitely believe we bring a unique approach, but at the same time, I believe that every situation is unique, every individual is unique. So the way that you communicate your thoughts is what you're presenting to the world when you're in that role. for me, communicating my thoughts is really trying to put my feelings into words, whether it be about an emotion, whether it be about something I'm looking at, because that's really what fuels me, my emotions. Of course, I am not so passionate that I would just do foolish things and get my cause myself problems or get into trouble by trying to live through my emotions or being fueled by my emotions. But at the same time, being able to communicate that, when I'm watching the fight and something gets me excited and and being able to communicate the reason why it gets me excited, and my thoughts on what the guy who's making the move, what his reasoning is or what he's feeling in that moment or what I believe he's feeling in that moment. I believe being able to communicate that really helps with translating what I'm seeing, and at the same time, I like to break down the technique of something, and sometimes the technique of something is not just what's happening in there, but the thought process that goes into the guy pulling off the technique.
And, you know, and that was another thing. I've heard a lot of people who have been watching all the organizations say what they love about PFL is their ability to actually, they draw on the screen, they break down the technique, and they really kind of make this more understandable to the casual fan. And I think that was something that you guys have really kind of excelled at, is being able to take a technique, take a particular situation, and break it down as to why it happened. I think sometimes, you know, we just get caught up, like you said, in the emotions of a fight, you know, winning with a knockout or winning with this crazy submission, that we forget to talk about what led up to that particular finishing move.
I understand what you're saying. I got to give George Greenberg some credit for that, because he introduced me to a man, John Ferratsis, who has really helped me be able to put those ideas, I was going to say on paper, but put those ideas into the world, through helping me with the Telestrator and what I'm explaining in the Telestrator. He's done a lot of work with a lot of different sports, and I've spent some good time with him and learned quite a bit from Ferratsis on how to explain my thoughts, really. So I don't know. I can't take all the credit, but it's just like anything else. For me, it's just like fighting and having a coach. Georgia and John have taught me so much, and they've coached me so well. I just need to continue with the drilling that they've taught me and just be able to put things out there, because they've invested some time in me, and I appreciate and love that, man.
I hear you. Now, let's talk a little bit about PFL. You know, obviously, they have the scoring system, the point system, which is very unique for what we've been seeing in MMA throughout the past few years. We've gone through PFL 1, 2, and 3, so you have been in New York, you have been in Chicago, you have been in D.C. Of the three that you've seen so far, are there any of those that kind of stick out in your head as being one of your favorites to date?
You know, that's a really messed up question, Ryan. That's like asking a parent which one of his kids is his favorite, you know? Because you know they have a favorite, but they can't tell you that. And at the same time, it's not really based on anything except some personal bias. And my personal bias is always going to lean towards 155-pound weight class.
Of course.
So I love Chicago. That was awesome. But I try to think back, and there's not a single fight in the PFL that I was like, eh, whatever. I mean, even the fights that don't go, that don't get finished, guys are still trying to win all the way through. You look at the Andre Harrison, Juma Bates, Tershin fight, and Andre was dominant, but Tershin was still fighting back. It was pretty one-sided, And it's very hard for a guy to get a finish on someone whose primary goal at this point is to defend themselves, and they know what it is that you're trying to do to an extent. But even though that fight went the distance and the pace wasn't the highest, it was still interesting for me to watch. Now, I don't know if that's because I've spent hours and hours, like thousands of hours watching fights, and I know what's going on, and I'm looking for the next move. And it's kind of like one of those movies where you don't necessarily know what's going to happen, but you have an idea of the possibilities, so you want to see how it turns out. So that's kind of how that fight, like those fights that go the distance for me in the PFL are, because even if they're one-sided, the other guy's in there for a reason, and he definitely has a chance. And he's not just trying to hold on and make it to the end. He's trying to find a way to pull it off.
Yeah. Now, you did mention Chicago, and I wasn't trying to force you to Chicago by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, you were.
No, I was not. but, you know, I did want to talk to you because you've been in two states that we know their athletic commissions can be a little odd. So the reason that I was asking and seeing what was going on in Chicago was you saw some of the fights and a little bit prematurely, maybe? Or
you can say it. Jason and I got screwed. Yeah, that's what happened.
Okay, yes. Then, I mean, Jason and I got screwed. And then we also saw the shot to the midsection that ended up causing a fighter to not be able to recover. So because of that, he lost. I mean, are these growing pains that you're going to see in this sport, or did the Illinois State Athletic Commission not really have their stuff together when this came up?
I think these are growing pains that you're going to see in these commissions. It's not the sport's fault. The sport has a set of rules. We've been here since, you know, 1993, and it's really just the commission. We had some issues with the commission and New York also, and it's not like these people are out to get the sport or anything like that. It's just it's kind of new in these regions, and in New York we had issues with the heavyweights. There was a rule, a stipulation in the state of New York that we found out that you can't be more than 25 pounds apart. And that only applies to heavyweights, I guess. But at the same time, it's a weight class. If the weight class is from 207 to 266, then like, the weight class is already set. It's approved, and you knew this is the weight class coming here. I don't know. Yeah, the promotion, I guess, could do that research, but then why do you have a heavyweight weight class? I don't understand. I guarantee you there have been boxing matches in the heavyweight division where guys were more than 25 pounds apart. I mean, New York has been too strong in the sport of boxing for too long for that not to be the case. So I don't understand why that was the case for us with the PFL and heavyweights and mixed martial arts.
You know, when you mentioned how every individual state athletic commission is going to have problems, at some point do you expect every state to come up with a unified set of rules, or is that just never going to happen and we need to get past that concept?
As long as society doesn't fall, it'll happen. You know, it's inevitable. But I couldn't give you a time frame on it. It's not going to happen next week. I don't believe it's going to happen by the end of this season. It's possible, but it's weird. It's kind of like everything else in the world, really. But just take the country, for example, in the U.S. I mean, you have some states you have to wear a helmet when you're riding a motorcycle, but there's some states where you don't. There's some states where, when I first moved to the U.S., I mean, in Texas, you could drive around with a semi-automatic rifle hanging in your rear windshield window, you know. But you couldn't do that in other places. It's weird, but at the same time, it's like the sport has been around for 20 years now, 25 years now. So this, a lot of the sport has been established, and these little things that we're running into, that we ran into in Chicago and New York, these things have already been worked out in Nevada or in New Jersey. And like, they already figured it out. Why do you have to figure it out for yourself? No, it's already been established. Let's just adopt someone else's rules because it works. We know that it works. So let's do that and move on and stop with this posture.
That's a great point that you make. And I think that it will happen, but like you said, it's going to take some time. So obviously we have PFL 4 coming up next Thursday. You will be back in the state of New York, in Uniondale, New York. That's going to be the featherweights and the heavyweights fighting. This is round two. So moving forward and having seen all these fighters fight on PFL and having seen them fight in the past, we're looking at this card. Which fight is the most intriguing to you leading up to PFL 4?
The most intriguing? Oh, man. Really? I would go with Alexandre Almeida and Steven Seiler. They both scored 6 points in the first bout out. Almeida didn't really have a challenge at all. He kind of walked right through Lee Colville. Seiler got hurt and was able to hit the comeback. So we now, I mean, for fans who don't know Seiler, they have an idea of how tough he is. They don't know how tough Almeida is, and he's a tough guy in his own right. But I think both of these guys can compete with each other in every realm, I believe. Different guys have strength in different areas, for sure, so they're going to be stronger in a certain area. I believe Seiler probably has the better hands, but Almeida is more dynamic, and his striking is still on point. When I say Seiler has a better hand, I'm going to take that back. Not say the more crisp or technical hands, but he has good power. And on the ground, I think that's where it starts to even out. I don't know, man. I'm really excited about that fight. Andre Harrison and Nazarene Malagheri, that's a good fight, but they're both low on the points rankings. So, like, one of those guys probably needs a finish, and one of those guys, I think, is a guy who should be in the playoff. I think both of those guys should be in the playoffs, but one of these guys may not make it just because they're going up against each other and they're low on points. So one guy has to score bonus points, and the guy who doesn't score the bonus points, I don't believe he's going to make the playoffs. So these are the things that we start looking at now. We start looking at numbers outside of the fight to see who's going to go into the first round of the playoffs, and that's where it's going to start. The stories are going to start to really come out.
You know, you mentioned how the scoring system works and how it's a top eight from each division that makes the playoffs. For those out there who don't know, explain a little bit how the matchmaking works going after the first round leading up to it. Is this blind draw? How does it work?
Wow, that question is one I won't answer because I am not sure. We've discussed some things in the past about how that should go, but the matchmaker is Ray Seffo, and I haven't spoken with Ray about ultimately how that was done, so I don't necessarily know. I'm looking at it, and I see some winners versus winners, but I also see some winners versus losers. I see Lance Palmer versus Zhumabek Turgeon, and Turgeon lost to Andre Harrison. Lance Palmer won in the second round in his fight with the rear naked. So it's one of those situations where I don't know how it played out, but I would want to talk to Ray or George and Carlos and those guys before commenting on that.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you could probably, I know that as we get into the later rounds, you know, we've seen everybody with their introduction fight. Now, as we get into the later rounds and we see fighters, like you said, some are fighting against a person who lost last time while they have a win on their record. Two people are fighting, like you said, that have low on points, but both won. So a lot of stories, as you said, are going to end up coming to light as PFL moves forward. And then, of course, I do want to make one more mention before we kind of let you go, going back again to Chicago. You know, you had Kayla Harrison in her debut fight, and that was something that a lot of people were really looking forward to. And I just want to get your opinion on how that fight went down, how Kayla did, and so forth.
I think Kayla did really well. She's, of course, this is, I'm biased, but she's with a great team, man. We saw her perform on a mixed martial arts level, and that's something she'd never done, you know, against a woman who had had, was in her eighth professional mixed martial arts fight. She'd competed, yes, outside of mixed martial arts, not at the level of the Olympics, but at the same time, she had competed at high-level tournaments. She'd won some Pan Am Jiu-Jitsu tournaments at the brown belt level. So she had some competition, a lot of competition experience, and she had more fight experience than Kayla. And Kayla won that fight from beginning to end. And not just with her judo background. Of course, she brought that in with her, and that helped a lot. But the ground and pound she was throwing, it was vicious. It was like, I would not want to be beneath that woman taking punches, because like she was throwing with some heat. It was kind of violent. I think she's been hanging out with Amanda Nunes a little bit too much. so it was one of those situations. It was a whole lot of fun to watch. I can't wait until she comes back and she fights again, because this is a really good place for her to grow. And I think she's going to be a threat, man. I think she's going to be a real threat in the world of women's mixed martial arts.
Wow, so much said in so little time. And Eve, I was able to even keep you, you know, under half an hour. But before we let you go, we'll see you next Thursday, July 19th, PFL 4, Uniondale, New York. You can find on NBC Sportsnet starting at 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central. But Eve, before we let you go, man, we always like to let our guests tell everybody where they can find them on social media platforms, you know, any sponsors that you want to plug.
Yeah, then you guys can always find me on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at ThugJitsuMaster. And you can find us on Facebook Watch, the pre-fight and the prelim show, or the what we call the undercard, is on Facebook Watch, and we go live, and I believe we go live on the East Coast at 6, and then we move to NBCSN at 9 p.m. And also, thank you, my suit sponsor from Chicago, Indochino. That beautiful maroon burgundy suit that I had on was a custom piece that people at Indochino made for me, and I love their suits, man. They make me look so good. So you guys that are trying to impress the ladies or impress someone in a job interview, you need to look those guys up, because you're walking there looking fresh to death.
All right. Eve, thank you again for your time. We appreciate it. We look forward to getting all of your commentary moving forward with PFL. And we will talk to you as PFL's season continues, my man. So enjoy your day down in Georgia, and we will see you next week in New York.
Thank you, Ryan. You have a great one, man. I'll see you pretty soon.
Absolutely. All right. Again, thank you for Eve Edwards for joining us on the show today. But stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to be joined by American Top Team Coach Mike Brown. A lot to discuss with him as Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Dustin Poirier get ready to head to UFC Calgary. Stay tuned, everybody. And welcome back to the SFLC podcast. Again, we want to thank Eve Edwards for coming on the show and kind of cutting it up with us as far as PFL is concerned. And just like that, by the magic powers of Skype, we are joined by American Top Team coach, another person I met in Chicago during PFL 2, Mike Brown. Mike, how are we doing over there, man?
I'm doing awesome. Doing great.
So you have quite the busy couple of, well, of course, you're always busy with the fighters that you have at your team. But specifically, coming up in the next few weeks, you have a lot to look at. Obviously, Junior Dos Santos is headlining UFC Boise this Saturday against Ivanov. That's a very interesting card, a very interesting fight. And we'll get into that in a minute. as well as a couple of fighters that are going to be at UFC Calgary. But Mike, just in general, American Top Team obviously has some of the best fighters in the world. How is the gym over there? How are all the fighters doing, the coaches? What's going on over there?
Yeah, it's busy, and it, you know, obviously we have a ton of depth, and there's some good things and bad things with that. You know, sometimes it's the coaches are a little thin, but the good thing is there's so many excellent training partners that, I mean, you're always sharing knowledge, and of course fighters are getting better just training with each other. Most of these fighters can and probably will be great coaches at some point in their life. So it's just a big pool of knowledge and everybody sharing.
And, you know, you talk about all the coaches over there, and we were talking off air. I think by the end of next week, I'll have interviewed like half of your coaching staff. You know, Dean Thomas, a great friend of the show, Mike Pendleton, who joins us. I'll be talking with Phil Deru, the strength and conditioning coach, next week. Just a wealth of knowledge that I'm about to learn from you guys. So I'm just as excited for this interview.
Yeah, super cool. You know, it's good if you're a student of the game, because there's people from all over the world, so they're bringing ideas from everywhere. And everybody's got a different angle at how they look at things, and it's a good place to grow.
So, you know, obviously we have Junior Dos Santos fighting. There's not much known about his opponent, Ivanov. As a matter of fact, UFC website doesn't even have a picture for Ivanov. It's just the shadowy figure. I mean, is Junior Dos Santos walking in here, is this kind of like a great way to return to the ring for him?
Yeah, he's training hard. I think lately he's been overlooked a little bit. People forget how talented this guy is. He's a freak athlete, and you don't see many guys in the heavyweight division that can move like him. I mean, it's a very short list of human beings at that size.
So we're expecting a victory for him this weekend, and then moving forward, we're going to continue to see his name all over UFC. And of course, you have a lot going on with that, but not to skip over that, but you have quite a bit coming up the following, towards the end of the month, on July 28th, UFC returns to Canada in Calgary, and I think like half of the card belongs to American Top Team, or so it seems. How excited are you? How excited are your fighters for this card coming up?
Yeah, we've been having a bunch of weekends or cards that turn into this type of thing. But so we have Junior and Jessica Aguilar this weekend. The following week, or maybe it's 2 weeks. 2 weeks we have Mark Giacosti. He's going to be in Germany. But then the last weekend of July, right, this is a big weekend. We have Calgary, which is Joanna Jędrzejczyk and also Dustin Poirier on the same card in Calgary. Both legitimately, you know, top three in the world, you know. And same weekend on the other side of the world, Kyoji Horiguchi fights in Ryzen. He's another guy who's top, you know, one or two in the world, I believe that. So, I mean, this is like top of the food chain, three fighters. It's tough to find the balance. And, you know, for this one, I'm going to go to Calgary with Dustin and Joanna and Steve Mako and Mikey Rod are going to head over to Japan with Kyoji. But we're spread thin, but it's a good problem to have.
I was going to say, that is a very good problem to have. But, Mike, you were a professional fighter yourself, and you see these fighters come in now as a coach. How impressed are you with just the style and the way that the sport has adapted since you were a fighter to now?
It's unbelievable. Honestly, I've been infatuated, obsessed, all these words. With MMA since the very beginning. I was just a monster fan since the early days. First one I ever saw live on pay-per-view was number 4, you know, so I haven't missed one since, I don't think. So it's really cool to see the evolution. And some of the things that have changed, you know, it's just, some of it I saw coming, some of it I had no idea. Like, just for instance, like way back in the day, you just didn't. When it all started, you know, Hoist Gracie, you know, these grapplers were dominated things. You know, I feel terrible now. I would look down upon things like karate. I didn't think it could be effective. And I'm like, oh, I don't see this working. And then, you know, as the years pass and times change and the sport evolves, you start having guys like Kyoji Horiguchi has this amazing karate style with a karate base. And it's so unique and so difficult to deal with. And so many of these techniques can be used and are effective, you know, once you have that solid MMA base down. It's something that it's really beautiful to see. And it's something that, you know, it's hard to predict at times.
You are certainly right on the prediction factor of that. Every fight card, myself and Steve Dunn and Mike Pendleton, we sit down and we do our segment Beat the Fight Guys, where we try and pick the fights, and I am just god-awful at that. So everything that you guys talk to me about right now, I absorb, and hopefully that helps my picks a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. And I mean, it's also a wild sport where the best fighter doesn't always win. So I like to bet, never big amounts. I like to bet small amounts on the fights just to kind of keep myself interested in small fights. I always find it interesting, like, it's like at the heavyweight division, it almost should never be like a 5-1 favorite, right? Because it's like everybody's one punch away from knocking the other guy out. And, you know, the consequences are so high and they hit so damn hard that the line should never move too far in one direction. Like the Lewis fight is a good example. Derek Lewis against Ngannou last week, right? Big dog. He was, almost like a 3-1 underdog. And that's kind of crazy for a world-class heavyweight like that to be down that much.
Well, and honestly, I don't think any of us expected that to go to the decision. And for the fight to go the way it did, it seemed like both fighters were a little timid. You know, they were afraid of each other's power, which is a good thing to be respectful of it. But, you know, the way that fight kind of went, I think a lot of fans were not happy about it.
No, of course, yeah. It was, people were unhappy. They expected a slugfest or probably a first-round knockout. Not many people ever thought that they could go the distance. But, you know, I think it was just too much respect on both sides. You know, nobody dared to make that first mistake, or nobody dared to commit and put themselves in the danger. Because one mistake and it can be over.
And we saw that with Stipe versus DC. So, I mean, everything kind of comes together. But, Mike, let's go ahead and talk about that Calgary card. Obviously, Joanna Jędrzejczyk needs no introduction. She's taking on the fifth-ranked Tisha Torres, who is 10-2. Joanna's only losses have come to Rose Namajunas. You know, she's had some battles. Quite a few have actually gone the distance. How is Joanna doing this fight camp and preparing for Tisha?
She's doing well. She's doing her thing. She's trying to improve at all parts of the game. Always a student and progressing, working along in her boxing, continuing with her kickboxing always, and adding wrestling and jiu-jitsu training. So it's a steady progression. Always to become a more well-rounded fighter in all disciplines. It's never about one thing, and it's never just about the opponent. It's about becoming a better fighter for the future also, and that's what she's doing.
After those losses to Rose, I mean, I'm sure that you had extended discussion with Joanna. How did she bounce back from that? Because I know a lot of people don't take losses like that too well, but Joanna seems to have just been able to move on and climb right back in there to try and regain her title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very, very strong-minded and mentally tough. And she's moved by it pretty quickly. You know, she knows this is the fight game, and anything can happen, and it probably will. You know, the first one was an early KO, and I don't think it was a good representation of what she can do. You know, and that can happen in this game, especially with small gloves and with all the variables.
I expected, of course. I mean, because sometimes, like, if a fight is really quick, somebody knocks somebody out in 30 seconds to a minute or something like this, there's a little bit of a factor where it's a little bit of a luck in a way. Not that I'm saying she was lucky, but I'm saying where, you know, maybe we're pretty evenly skilled, but if I knock you out in 30 seconds a minute, doesn't mean I'm that much better than you. You know, it can be a much closer fight next time. And obviously that was the case. In a similar case, like Matt Serra, GSP. It wasn't like Matt Serra is, he's so much better than GSP, that's why you knocked him out. It's the crazy variables, you know, and that's what makes it fun to watch. But, you know, the second fight was a better indication of how equally matched the fighters were. And it was a great fight and a close fight and a good learning tool. You know, it's we learn from it, build, and move on from there. She did that right away.
Now, without giving out too much information, what is the game plan for Joanna at the end of the month going up against Tisha? What's the key to success as you see it?
Yeah, I mean, you never want to give away too much, but it should always be kind of, it should be, I mean, I kind of have a blanket game plan for all fights, you know. When hit and don't get hit on the feet, and if it goes to the ground, be on top. You know, those are the basic principles and ideas that we want to go into every fight with. You know, of course, there's more detailed nuances to how that's going to be done, and that's the type of stuff you don't want to tip your cards too much before a fight.
Exactly. So we move on, and of course, best of luck to Joanna moving forward. Again, she is far from being done with this, but of course, then we end up going to the main event of the Calgary card, where Dustin Poirier is going to take on Eddie Alvarez. Of course, we had that no contest back at UFC 211 last year. How excited is Dustin Poirier for this rematch against Eddie Alvarez?
Wow, he's been looking for it for a long time. He's been chasing me. I mean, he tried to get this fight five or six times, I think, for whatever reason. Eddie couldn't make it happen or wasn't interested in the fight. But Dustin is making huge gains in every fight. I mean, he really is. He's really maturing, and he's the complete package. You know, I think him and Joanna have one thing in common. They both have, like, a really, really crazy gas tank. And in my mind, that's, like, maybe the most important attribute you can have as a fighter. And they both have an amazing one. And mental toughness coupled with world-class conditioning, you got a hard fight on your hands from bell to bell. It's not going to be easy.
So with him, obviously, we saw a kind of a barn burner up until that no contest came up. Is Dustin in the point where he's one fight away from challenging for the title, or does he have another couple of ways to go? Because, I mean, obviously, we have Conor McGregor, we have Tony Ferguson, we have Khabib Nurmagomedov. There's so many people there. What is Dustin doing to keep his mind out of that clutter?
I think he's there. He's ready to do it, and I think it's he could be next, I think maybe he should be. I mean, unless Conor comes back, I mean, this would happen, of course. This will, you know, kind of trump everything. But he's learned so much. After that fight, he's matured a lot after each one. But specifically that first Eddie fight, he was really picking Eddie apart. He was really beating Eddie up. You know, I thought he was really having his way. You know, he was landing the shots. He was not getting hit. And it was smooth and it was deliberate. And it was, and I believe he was really pulling away. And then he hurt Eddie really badly, almost not so much. And then he got a little reckless, right? So then once he smelled the blood, Eddie was wobbled and rough. And then he kind of, he lost a little bit of concentration and was just went into kill mode, where he should have been a little more careful and cautious. And then he just went to kill mode and this position where he's, you know, pulling back, loading up and trying to kill him. he gets clipped with a shot on the way in, and then, you know, he gets wobbled and hurt, and then it turns into the, ends up finished with this, you know, no contest when he, those knees to the head of a downed opponent. But before that all happened, he was really controlling that fight, you know. So had he just like stuck to what he was doing throughout the first portion of that fight, you know, it would have been, an easy finish or an easy win for him. And I think he learned from it, man. He learns from all these, you know, and that was a big lesson. And I can see it in how he trains and how he fought after that.
And of course, he has that big win over Justin Gaethje back in April, the fourth round TKO, fight of the night as well. So he was super excited for that. But coach, from a coaching standpoint, this fight against Justin Gaethje happened in the middle of April, and he's turning around the end of July to take on Eddie Alvarez. 3.5 months, if that. From a coaching standpoint, are you okay with him coming back so quick to take on such a game opponent like Eddie Alvarez?
I mean, he's a fighter. That's what he wants to do. You know, he wants to fight. And, of course, Eddie's dangerous, you know, but, yeah, every fighter's dangerous. And, you know, I don't like the idea of when, you know, people sit on a position, you know, that they get to a position, they sit on it, they don't want to fight anybody behind them. They don't want to, they just want to keep this position and only, you know, look for this one fight. You know, it's a fight game. You got to fight, you know, things aren't going to be always lined up perfectly, and you're not going to get, you know, the exact fight you want, or maybe the title shot that you probably even deserve, but you just got to keep fighting, you know, and, this is important. It's important to stay busy, and it's important to, improve each time and learn from each fight. And till you can't be denied, you know, like, if you just keep fighting and winning, they won't be able to deny you.
That's a great way of looking at it. Now, coach, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a minute. Obviously, Khabib is the champ, Tony Ferguson, the number one contender, Conor McGregor, the number two contender, until probably Conor comes back, and then we'll see what happens. From the outside looking in, and your perspective, how do you see this whole kind of trio working itself out?
See, this is, who knows, you know, who knows when Conor's coming back, you know, if, I know he's made a lot of money. I know it seems like he's doing a lot of different things right now. I don't know. I have any idea where his mind is at. How, I mean, and for all I know, he could come back in 3 months or 5 years or maybe never. I mean, I really don't know, you know, where his mindset is at. So that's such a question mark, you know. And if he comes back, of course, he's going to like, and as he should, is he'll be at the front of the line or, that's the fight they're going to want, that they're going to make. And that makes sense. Now Ferguson, that's a different story. I know he's got a bad injury. This is, I think, a pretty major one. I think 6 months to a year, he's out. Maybe he doesn't even want to jump into a title fight right away. Maybe he needs to like a little bit of a tune-up fight. I don't know if that's possible or what, but, he's another guy that's up there. But I think Dustin and Khabib make sense. And I think I think Khabib knows that and realizes it. I think he wants to fight the best guys, and I think he wants to make that fight happen because Dustin is the guy that's kind of he's always there to fight, and he's every fight is exciting. There's never a fight that he's in that's not amazing, and he's beating these guys. Like Pettis was a UFC champion, Eddie Alvarez was a UFC champion. Max Holloway is a UFC champion. I mean, he's fought and or beaten many of these high-level, high-caliber guys. The Gaethje was fight of the year, you know, unbelievable scrap. Every one of his fights are like this. He's the real deal, and it's his time.
Thank you again, Coach. I really appreciate that breakdown. Now, the last question I had for you before I let you go. I don't know how unique of a situation this is for American Top Team or for really any of the gyms out there, But you're looking in the very near future of having the welterweight champion Tyron Woodley and the interim champion Colby Covington having to face off for the outright welterweight champion. What is, at least from American Top Team, what is the standard operating procedure when you have two fighters who are matched up to fight each other?
Yeah, we just start really running into that problem now. I mean, it was always kind of talked about as, you know, only for a title, you know, only for a title fight for big money, you know, and we're starting to run into that. But there is another side where you see ATT fighters fight ATT fighters. When you see some of the guys that are, they're actually not training at the home base gym a whole lot. They're at one of the satellite gyms, because we do have some satellite gyms down in South Florida. And for instance, Tyron Woodley, he runs his own ATT gym out there in Missouri. So, you know, he's not doing a whole lot of, he wasn't doing a whole lot of training here. So it's almost like a separate ATT gym, you know. He has trained here in the past, so it's not too much of a problem in that situation, because he's elsewhere. I mean, that was the case when he fought Robbie Lawler. He was training in Missouri also at Duke Rufus's gym, and Robbie was here. So that's a little bit different. It's not like you're fighting a guy you're training around all the time, you know. This is a new problem now we have with PFL, because this is a tournament scenario, right? There's a lot of big fights, a lot of guys, same weight in the same tournament. Now, you're bound to run into each other. So we're starting to see that. We got a bunch of guys in that lightweight bracket specifically. You got Will Brooks, who's very good, can win the tournament. You got Nathan. We got Rashid. And we got Jason High, who comes and goes and also owns a satellite gym. So we got like four fighters in that lightweight tournament. This is a whole new problem, but it's a good problem.
Again, a good problem, but what would be the outcome should you end up having two fighters, like you said, in PFL, that would not only be fighting each other, but they'd be fighting each other and they're around the same gym, not a satellite gym. What would the coaches do in a situation like that?
Well, we're kind of separating the coaches, like, because we have a big coaching staff. So, you know, we have like 12 coaches. So you kind of have the guys that you gravitate towards, they gravitate towards you, the chemistry, whatever it might be. We kind of separate the coaches for each fighter so they're not overlapping. You know, we wouldn't have one coach training two fighters that are going to fight each other, right? So it'll be maybe these two coaches will train Will, and these other two coaches will train Rashid, something more along that line, you know, and that's kind of what's, and this is the first time it's happened, really. This is, it's coming up right now. So we're just trying to feel things out and go through those motions, and we'll let you know how it goes in like 6 months, you know, because it's just happening now for the first time.
Right. You know, if we look at this a little bit deeper, and this is something I'm going to ask you, Coach. There have been murmurs in the MMA community that Tyron Woodley has kind of gone to some of the people from American Top Team and talked about his dismay with Colby Covington even training with American Top Team, and saying that after he beats Colby, he wants Colby removed from American Top Team. Is that something that you guys have had to look at, or is this just people talking shit?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm assuming it's, he's talking shit, but I mean, I don't know, maybe he's serious about it. I don't know. I don't think Colby's going anywhere. I mean, I'm sure he, you know, Colby's not making a lot of fans, or maybe he is making fans. He's not making people happy with his the style that he's going about it and the shtick. And you know, honestly, I was never a big fan of it. You know, it's a bit of the pro wrestling style brought in. But I will say it's worked. You know, it has got him bigger fights. It got him the interim title fight. It's worked. It's got him in people's skin. It's you know, love him or hate him, you know, everybody's listening to what he's saying, and it's working. He's getting clicks. He's getting eyeballs, and he's also got that interim title shot. And he has the skills to back it up. He's absolutely 100%. An amazing fighter and can beat anybody in the world. And he's showing that right now. He's got maybe the best gas tank I've ever seen. And he's been wrestling since a kid, and he's picking up striking very quickly. And he's the real deal. So it's going to be a huge fight. I mean, he's bringing eyeballs, and he put himself in position to win the title, and we're gonna find out what's gonna happen pretty soon.
So we'll take this back, and we'll kind of end on a lighter note for you, Coach. Amanda Nunes just posted recently that she signed a fight contract to take on that superstar that's in 145 pounds. Is this happening sooner or later? What have you heard from this?
Yeah, I know she signed the contract. I know she's been wanting the fight for a while, for a year or two, and they've been going back and forth about it. And now I know she has signed a contract on her end, and I think she's just waiting on the other end. She's big challenges and big fights, and I think balls in Cyborg's court is how it looks. That's all I know, and we'll find out.
That's awesome. Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time with us. Like I said, American Top Team has been very good to our show, and we really appreciate the support that you guys give us.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me on, man. And yeah, good stuff. I love what you're doing.
But before we let you go, Coach, where can the fans out there find you, follow you, see all the progress from American Top Team, your Twitter, all that good stuff?
Okay, yeah, AmericanTopTeam.com. That's where we were at, best gym in the world. Yeah, and I'm Mike Brown MMA. That's Instagram and Twitter. So you can find me there. Not to be confused with the other 100,000 Mike Browns here in America, but yeah, Mike Brown MMA. You'll find me somewhere.
There we have it, everybody. Thanks again to both Mike Brown from American Top Team and Eve Edwards for joining us on the show today. Just like that, episode 325 is in the books. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you all next week. Enjoy the fights this weekend.